Accession number 17564, Reel 1.
Mr. Jones, Reel 1.
Where were you born, please?
In Liverpool.
Which year was this?
1922.
Can you tell me something about your family background, whether you grew up in Liverpool or not?
Oh, yes. I spent all my childhood in Liverpool. I have one sister. My father... Do you want to know about my father? Father and mother? My father was in the Liverpool police, and we lived in Walton when I was a child.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I left elementary school, as it was called then, at 14, and went to the Liverpool College of Art for 2 years.
Which year did you leave there?
That would be in 1938.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I got a job as a trainee artist in an advertising studio.
And you were doing that when war broke out?
Yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I listened to the broadcast. And my mother panicked a bit and sent me off to a local chemist to get some bandages and burn treatment. She was expecting it any time.
How did you feel about war being declared?
I felt rather sick, really, because I'd always been influenced by the events of the First World War. And when I suddenly realised it was going to happen again, it filled me with a certain amount of dread. Really, there was no yippee, let's get in at it. I felt a feeling of dread and foreboding, and my mother was very upset too.
Did the war affect you at first?
No, it didn't affect me at all, really, until the Blitz started, till Liverpool started to become attacked, and then it did, because it was hitting me personally then. And along with about 30 other people, I lost my job, because the people that ran the studio thought that the raids were going to increase and that they wouldn't be able to get the work to keep all these people in employment. So they just had to shed the staff, most of the staff.
What did you see of the Liverpool Blitz?
Quite a lot, really, because I joined the Home Guard when it first started. And when the sirens went, we were stood too, with rifles and bayonets, and manned a blockhouse locally, and often on patrol in town during the Blitz. So I saw quite a bit of it.
Which blockhouse was this?
There's two railway lines that run round the outskirts of Liverpool, and wherever a road crossed the railway, they built a blockhouse, which was supposed to form a defensive line around Liverpool. And these blockhouses were manned by the Home Guard.
So you went to different blockhouses?
No, it's a local one.
What one was that called?
That was Sandfield Park, which is now the training ground for Everton Football Club.
Did your Home Guard unit have a particular number or name?
Oh, it would have, but I'm afraid I've forgotten now what it would be.
Where did you meet?
At Sandfield Park, a small tennis club.
Is it Sandfield or
Sandfield? Sandfield Park.
With a D in the middle?
Yeah.
What type of people were in the Home Guard unit?
Well, very old or very young. I mean, it's very similar to Dad's army. The CO was a Major Smith who'd lost his arm, lost an arm in the First World War. But he wasn't a bit like Captain Mannering really. He was a different personality altogether. But he was a very good snooker player because he used to, instead of used, because he couldn't use a rest with only having his right arm, so he used to put a brush on the table to use as a rest. And he was quite good.
Did you get much training with the Home Guard?
Well, just dashing across the field with a rifle and bayonet and dropping down to take cover. Oh, and we went occasionally to the firing range at Olka, which is just up the coast from Formby, and we used to practice firing there at the targets. That was quite interesting. And then, of course, I joined the Air Force, and I selected deferred service. I joined in February 41, still in the Home Guard.
Could I just stop you there before we go on to the Air Force, if I could just ask you a bit more?
They overlap, really. The Home Guard and the Air Force overlap for a bit. Go on.
Did you have a uniform with the Home Guard?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I had a uniform. It was only denims, but I had a nice greatcoat.
And your own weapon?
And I had a Canadian Ross rifle, the 303, and I could keep it at home. But no ammunition, of course. When we went on duty, we had to draw ammunition.
Did any incidents occur whilst you were guarding these posts?
Yes, I was damn near shot. We were in, about six of us in the blockhouse. The sirens went, and the corporal said, "You better load up." What for, I don't know. Parachutists, maybe, he thought. Anyway, somebody made a mess of loading his rifle, and the thing went off, and the bullet hit my steel helmet and ricocheted round the inside of the blockhouse, fortunately, without hitting anybody. But it left me with a deaf right ear for about a week afterwards. That was my first narrow squeak with death.
Did you expect the Germans to invade?
Oh, yes. Yes, we all did. Yeah. Yeah. Not up here. We didn't expect them to parachute us to land in Liverpool. Most people in the country did expect that they would land. It was quite on the cards they would. And it sounds ridiculous now, really, but I think the time we were all prepared to take one with us. You know, we knew that we hadn't got any chance at all. We'd seen the films of German troops advancing through the Low Countries and sweeping everything before them. We knew we hadn't got any chance, but the general thought was that if you could take one with you, you know, it might do some good.
Any other incidents that happened whilst you were with the Home Guard?
Well, a bad night when an ammunition train blew up. We weren't close to it, but we were close enough to feel the blast and the noise. There was an ammunition train that had been left in Edge Hill Sidings, which you came through, actually, on the train. And the raid started, and it was loaded with ammunition. And they decided that it would be best to move it away from the built-up area. So a volunteer engine crew took the train to a stretch of embankment away from houses, where it eventually, of course, blew up. But nobody was injured or even killed. But we were fairly close to that.
What dates were you in the Home Guard from to, do you remember?
Well, from when it started. I mean, Anthony Eden made a speech on the 9 o'clock news that he was going to form a Home Guard, or LDV as it was called at first, and people who wanted to join could go along to the local police station. Well, the broadcast had just finished, and my next door neighbour came round and he said, "I'm going to join, do you want to come as well?" So I said, "Yes, sure." So off we went to the police station, and there was a queue down the road waiting to join, and they hadn't got any forms or anything. Everybody was that keen. Anyway, we went back later on and signed up. But he was a much older man than me.
Was this 39 or 40?
That would be 40. Well, you could find out the date easy enough, the date it was formed.
And as far as the bombing was concerned, what do you actually remember about the bombing?
Well, quite a lot, really. The buildings burning, the smell, the smoke. My father coming home covered in soot, smelling of burning buildings. He didn't talk very much about it, but I know he must have had a bad time.
Did any bombs fall near you?
Yes, we got an incendiary in the front garden. Fortunately, it didn't go into the roof, but it went into the garden, which was the closest we ever got to it.
What was your address?
I was living in West Derby at the time, not far from here.
Do you remember the address?
Yes, 19 Agincourt Road.
What did you do with the incendiary? Did you put it out?
Well, we didn't even know it had dropped. It just buried itself in the soil and extinguished itself.
Did many bombs fall in the West Derby area?
One of the first bombs in Liverpool fell in West Derby, and it demolished a wing of the Jolly Miller pub. That was one of the first.
When would that have been about?
Well, pretty early on in the Blitzes. Be the beginning of the year, I should think. The worst time in Liverpool, as far as the Blitz is concerned, was the May Blitz in 1940. It was a fire-raising raid, and when buildings caught fire, they hadn't got water to put it out, and it spread to the building next door, and the next thing, you know, the whole area had gone. And we had seven consecutive nights of bombing. And people were beginning to leave the city at night, you know, to go and sleep in the fields. The weather was quite warm, you know, so that's what they were doing, a lot of people.
Were you in that?
No, I stayed at home.
But you were in Liverpool?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In West Derby?
Yeah.
Was it a frightening experience?
Well, the only time I was really frightened was we had an air raid shelter in the garden, which my mother liked to use, and my sister. But if my father was on duty, I used to stay in the shelter with them. But if he was at home, I used to stay in bed. But this particular night, my father was on duty, and there was a bit of a lull in the bombing, and my mother said she'd like a cup of tea, so I went into the kitchen to make a cup of tea, and I heard a bomb coming down, and I shot under the sink like a bolt, banged my head on the U-bend of the pipe, and nearly knocked myself out, and the bomb fell some distance away, so it wasn't as close as I thought it was. But that was about the only time I was really scared. Because what they used to say was that you didn't hear the one that was going to kill you.
How do you think public morale stood up in the Blitz in Liverpool?
Well, some people were getting a bit shaky. But generally, you know, being Liverpool people, they got on with it. You know, they had to go to work. If the tram lines were blown up, you walked. You know, and ships kept coming in and out of the Mersey, although the docks were getting it. But people just had to carry on.
Did people hate the air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Well, quite a lot of remarks about what they'd do with them if they bailed out and got hold of them. I mean, which was understandable in a way. I mean, the position when I was in the Air Force, the position was reversed, wasn't it?
Can you tell me about joining the Air Force now, please?
Yes, I got my job back by this time. They realised that they could carry on, so they asked people to come back. And I decided to join up, and one of the chaps I was pally with in the studio, he was keen to go as well, so we both decided one day to do it. We talked about it for long enough, let's do it. I wanted to go in the Royal Navy, and he wanted to go in the Air Force. So we went along to the recruiting office and Rancho Hall, and the naval fellow was out for lunch. So we said, right, well, we'll join the Fleet Air Arm. Get the best of both then. We got the Navy and the flying as well. So he was out for lunch. So the only one that was in was the Air Force recruiting officer. So we thought, well, we've got to do it now. We can't come back again. We'll do it now. And we joined the Air Force. And that was, it was as simple as that.
This was August 41.
February 41. And we were eventually offered immediate service or deferred service, because obviously the training programs weren't in operation. I wanted to go as a pilot, but my education qualifications weren't sufficient. So I plumped for wireless operator air gunner. Anyway, they said you can have this deferred service or go right away. So if I went right away, I'd only be on general duties and I could be doing anything. General duties encompassed anything at all on the station. So I decided to stay at work and wait till they called me in for training, which was not until August. So in that time, I was still in the Home Guard.
What happened once the training started?
Well, we went to Blackpool first. Well, before that, we had to go to Padgate for what they called attestation. That was an aircrew selection board and a medical. And they decided then if you were fit enough mentally and physically, they would call for you when they needed you for training. And that came in August. And we were called to Blackpool for ITW, initial training wing, which really was just square bashing. And, well, in Blackpool it was promenade bashing and elementary radio and then starting to learn Morse, which took a long time. There was no quick way of learning Morse, the Morse code. It had to be over quite a period of many weeks before you could even remember it. Like learning a foreign language. Can't do it quickly. But that was the... we had civvy billets, of course, in Blackpool, which was very nice. We had a very cosy billet. We used to do PT on the sands. run up to Bisham and back. Drill along the prom or in the streets. And do the radio training in the winter gardens. Of course, we had our evenings free. You know, we could. It was nice weather in August in Blackpool, quite pleasant. We didn't have very much money, of course, but we made the best of it. You can get by with very little money in Blackpool in those days. I don't really need it now. And that went on for 3 months. And then we had numerous examinations in Morse sending and receiving in that period as well. And if you made a certain number of mistakes, you were thrown off the course. And then the only thing you could do then was to remuster as a straight air gunner, which my friend did. Fortunately, he was killed about 6 months later. But I managed to pass all the tests and went on to the next part of the training, which was Yatesbury in Wiltshire.
What did that involve?
More or less the same thing, but getting a little bit more technical with the radio theory. And again, more sending and receiving. But I didn't realise at the time that they were spinning the course out because they hadn't got the aircraft ready for us. I didn't realise how long it was going to take before I finally passed out. But I realised, well, later on in the war and after the war, that they hadn't got the aircraft for us. In other words, the four-engine heavies weren't ready.
Were you at all impatient to get on operations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to get it over with. Yeah. And from... We had a very stiff final examination at Yatesbury. And the person that passed me out was a Flight Sergeant Cox. Now, he became famous to a raid on Bruneval on the French coast in 1941. He was the only bloke in the Air Force that knew anything about radar. And they'd spotted these radio dishes on the French coast, and they wanted to know what they were, you know, and if possible to get some of the parts out of them and bring them back to England. And Flight Sergeant Cox was dropped by parachute with a wheelbarrow, and some airborne troops who captured the local garrison round this radar thing. And he unscrewed the bits he wanted, put them in a wheelbarrow, and trundled them down to the beach, and they were all picked off by submarine.
Is he still alive?
He was up to about 15 years ago. There was a film made of it, and they called him Flight Sergeant Box. Why, I don't know. But it was Flight Sergeant Cox that passed me out for my Sparks badge.
What happened to you next?
Well, we went on leave, and then we went to gunnery course at Pembrey, South Wales. That wasn't very long. It was only about 4 or 5 weeks, I think, something there.
What did you think of the quality of the instruction that you received?
Oh, top class. The instruction right the way through the Air Force in any trade at all is absolutely first, or was absolutely first class. We could never grumble about the training, lack of training. It was very thorough. And if you didn't learn, it wasn't the fault of the instructors, it was your own fault. They were very good.
Did the Germans ever raid any of the bases at which you were trained?
No. We got many alerts, but never any raids.
What was the attitude of the public towards RAF aircrew during the war in Britain?
Well, we were little tin gods, really. I mean, you get people coming up to you in pubs and somebody handed me a half brick. Would you drop that for me? You know, and things like that. Ridiculous. Would you drop a bottle for me or something? You know, it makes a noise when it's coming down. Silly things, but... They thought we were great. We felt great, you know, and our crew. We belonged to one of the greatest air striking forces that had ever been.
We felt
a great pride.
What did you do with these half bricks and bottles?
I just throw them away.
Did they do this because of hatred of the enemy, or what?
Probably, yes. Maybe somebody had the house bombed, you know. Also, you must remember that up till the Second Front started, the RAF were the only people who were taking the war to Germany. And I think that's what cheered people up and, you know, made us... into somebody who was... They knew we were doing something. Because before the Second Front started, you know, we weren't in any fit state to invade Europe at all. I mean, the RAF were the only ones that were actually going over there and doing something.
And the next stage in your training?
That was up to Silloth, I think, is it?
Wigtown.
Can I just... Can you pass the thing over? I've forgotten what... Yes, AFU Wigtown was... it was a navigator's... it's just an advanced flying unit, training navigators and wireless operators. We were flying and clapped out Ansons. It really was, again, just a time-wasting thing. Just doing night cross-countries and getting bearings and fixes and things like that.
Had you been allocated to one of the RAF commands by now?
Oh, no.
Then I think you went to Atherston.
Anyway, I think the Silloth missed out somewhere. Can I have a look at that? Go on.
I'm not sure that you've put that down.
I haven't got Silloth down.
Where's Silloth? Cumbria?
It's just outside Carlisle. I haven't got that down. Can you switch the thing off?
What exactly happened to you at Silloth near Carlisle?
Well, I was signals maintenance work on Lockheed Hudson's. Now, I'd been trained on British equipment, what we used to call the old Jeep, so the transmitter and receiver, which was in operation before the war. And then when we went to Silloth, we found that Lockheed Hudson's had Bendix radio equipment, and I'd never seen a Bendix in my life before. And we were expected to do maintenance on Bendix radio, so I had to more or less learn all about them before I could do anything about mending them. So really it was, again, a bit of time wasting. But while I was at Silloth, the 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne was mounted, and three of the Lockheed Hudsons from Silloth were detailed to take part in this raid, and one of them was flown by the CO, and it was shot down, missing. This is something I've found out since the war.
You didn't go on that raid?
Oh no, I wasn't flying. No, I was only in LAC at the time. I hadn't got my tapes. I hadn't done the gunnery course. See, this is out of order.
I think you crewed up in about May 1943 or summer 1943.
That's right.
How was that done?
Very haphazard, really. It was quite the usual practice to get everybody in a large room. Pilots, navigators, wireless operators, gunners, bomb aimers, and just get everybody mixing. And then just being told, sort yourselves out. Pilots, find your crew. Anybody who hasn't got a pilot, find a pilot, and so on. And you just circulated in this room. And I